Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time to talk about the offense from that season-ending loss to the Steelers. This is actually the happy side of this discussion relative to talking about the defense. Joining me to do it is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing pretty well, things considered. And thank you for giving me the offense. Definitely more fun to talk about.
Yeah. The Ravens, of course, lost that season finale in Pittsburgh on the final play. We had the John Harbaugh firing is overshadowing everything today. Now, I'm going to ask you folks to look. I had a preview for a pod that I put out there in short video form, but also there'll be a longer pod with Jonas Schaefer that'll be available. Should be out before this is out. So look backwards on the Film Study timeline to find that podcast on your favorite platform. But I do appreciate you joining me here, Gabe. And another loss of snap count in dramatic fashion, 73-48. The defense dog tired there as the game wore on in that second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a theme for the season. You know, it's very different than the Ravens offense that we've seen in years past, where they've strung together, you know, these 12, 15 play drives, dominate time possession. And I think, you know, on a defense that's already kind of like a little bit bereft of talent, especially in the pass rush, to have to go out there and you know, chase after a quarterback who's not very mobile, but you know, he's willing to get the ball out quick, and you're just tired after running that same thing over and over again, especially with the defensive injuries they had.
Yeah, the injury to Hamilton, obviously, he's one of the biggest players against a player like Rodgers, who likes to get the ball out quick on those little swing passes to running backs, which, you know, they really had as a replacement for part of their running game or an extension of their running game in this game. And very frustrating to see all the missed tackles. And obviously, but let's move over to the offensive side of the ball. The discussion is a little bit better there at all. I think we start with Lamar Jackson in terms of his return to form in this game. Really hadn't been the same since the first 4 weeks of the season. Those weeks in between, he was a completely different quarterback. He did have a couple of decent rating games in there. He had a good game at Miami when he came back, and he had a reasonably good game at Minnesota, where he didn't throw any interceptions. I don't think it might have been two touchdowns, no interceptions or thereabouts. But this was the first really big Lamar game, making great plays with his legs and looking like he's the Lamar of old again, which is a enormous relief in a awful loss.
Yeah, I think it was really a whole season, in my opinion, where he was injury marred. I don't know exactly when the initial injury happened. I think he was dealing with nagging things before the Kansas City game. He didn't look himself to me, like going in a couple games before that one. And he, he really played the entire season hurt, I think. But it's good to see that he does have that, you know, extra gear. You know, we saw it on the scramble or draw that was called back from the Linderbaum penalty. He looked like his old self. You know, it would pick up, you know, 20, 25 yards in the open field, make players miss. He was able to extend the plays, you know, avoid sacks. He was, you know, MVP Lamar. In that game.
We'll come back and we'll talk about Lamar a little later, but wonderful game relative to his opportunity set as well. They moved the ball, the team as a whole, they moved the ball well on that first drive. Then they went up 10-0 I think it was the third drive, right? They had a miss and then they had a field goal. I think it was the third drive. They went up 10-0. And then they allowed 24 second half points. In the first half, they put that 24 in the second. The three fourth quarter comebacks were really something special. I thought each of them was really something special. Lamar beating the traffic on third and one for the long time. That's then the 64 yard pass to Flowers, which just seemed to be a really well schemed up play. And then the unbelievable fourth and seven, fourth and eight, whatever it was, up and down throw to Isaiah Likely.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that was an incredible pass, like, you know, scrambling to avoid pass rush, moving to his left, making that throw right where it had to be. And then props to Isaiah Likely, you know, he's had that penchant to make those kind of plays in big moments. You know, obviously there have been some plays where, you know, you'd wish for him to, you know, be able to hold on to the ball. he's had a couple of snafus this season, but that was a big time play by him. You don't see Ravens receivers make that kind of play that often.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the 2023 catch against Jacksonville down the stretch when he went up high for the ball. He made a great game that game overall. The Keaton Mitchell kickoff return, I think, is something we'll probably forget about in some ways, but that was a thing of beauty as well. And it put them in field goal range, with a first down, basically. Good things. The offensive line was not a thing of beauty. We'll get to that in the second half of the show, but extremely frustrating night for the offensive line in a lot of ways. They did run the ball somewhat effectively. The offensive line was a part of that, but they really did not have a good day pass blocking.
Yeah, it was a tough game across the board and pass blocking. I mean, Steelers have one of the better defensive lines in the NFL, across the board, at the edges, defensive tackle. They had some good blitz designs, I think, in this game that kind of confused the offensive line a little bit. I think that's been an issue all season, and kind of being able to identify some of the different blitz designs and figure out who should be picking up who. You sometimes left somebody picking up nobody, and that's been an issue. So the fact that the Ravens were able to, have the offensive performance they had despite those issues, I think, was saying a lot about, Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah. It did seem like the mesh point was working again. Jackson put the ball in Henry's gut, and then he ran for that early first down, that's exactly what this team needed, because the Ravens' misdirection is all based on Lamar Jackson and his ability to threaten the edge and to really present the defense with an 11th offensive player that they have to account for. So to me, seeing Lamar be able to do that again this year at least means to me that there has not yet been a concession to age. Yeah. And you worry about that with injuries and people coming back from injuries that they might never fully recover from this kind of thing. But I think this performance, there were a lot of good plays that would indicate that concessions to age have not come yet.
Yeah, I just think it was kind of a fluke season for him. It seemed like it was one issue after another. And maybe that there is some more likelihood that you have more injuries as you age when you're an athletic player. I mean, your bodies do decline over time, so that may be something to monitor. But I don't see any reason why, if he's healthy, he won't be at the peak of his powers, essentially being able to do whatever he wants on the football field.
Yeah, I would agree. And the Ravens, I think, in part the move on from Harbaugh may improve the chances that the Lamar negotiations go more smoothly and they get the extension done prior to next season, which I think everybody wants for a lot of reasons, including relieving the Ravens of producing some cap space. Going back to this game though, Ravens went to a larger reliance on the power runs against the Packers. Against the Steelers, it's not as easy to do that. They have a massive front, even with a bunch of duo blocks. With two duo blocks, which is really the most you can do on any play, you are not going to easily get the advantages you want against a team like the Steelers that is predatory from those edge positions and is very large and difficult to move on the inside. Some ways I think you are better using either zone or trying to get to the outside and crack back. And so you're only dealing with an edge and a tackle maybe that you have to seal to the inside. And I thought, it was probably the right thing to go for in this game. I know Henry likes the zone runs better. It seemed like in this game, it was running to the outside that was largely more effective, including the very first run of the game. It kind of a very different run look than they had against the Packers.
Yeah, I think it's in some ways goes to show you that they are paying attention to what teams do to come up with a scheme that attacks where you can best attack the defense you're playing, which I think that is good coaching. That's what you should be doing. You should be identifying the strengths and the weaknesses of the defense. And I think we'll probably get into it a little bit, but they attacked them in the passing game too. I think the Steelers were trying to take away the run. They're trying to crowd the line of scrimmage. And the Ravens were able to take advantage of that multiple times. It wasn't always easy, but they made it happen.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I think they did do a good job of taking what the Steelers were giving them, and that's I think a really good point. They went only 4 of 12 on third down. They did go 2 of 2 on fourth downs. So that brings it up to 6 of 12 third downs were converted on either third or fourth down. It's just the way I usually present it. The Steelers were 10 of 16 on third downs converted on either third or fourth down, but that did include a failure on fourth down, which gave the Ravens a short field that they turned into a field goal, right? That's the one they turned into a field goal on the third drive.
So yeah, that's when they went up 10-0. That was a touchdown. They could have been a touchdown. Might have been a different game, I feel, at that point. But
yeah,
you can never know.
Certainly a shame that they got stopped at that point. But it just shows you these Steelers have been really stopped to that point. So they missed a third down, missed a fourth down, missed a third down before that on the first drive when they might have been four and out, but they got a first down on the first play or something. So they were really unsuccessful on third and fourth down before then, but after that they were very dominant the rest of the way. The series efficiency, there's a big difference between the two teams, but also a big difference between the Tyler Huntley Ravens, who went 30 of 33 against the Packers. Take it for what it's worth, but it's 91%. It's one of the greatest figures I've ever seen in a game. And the Lamar Ravens, who went 12 of 19 against the Steelers. And it's bad to call them Lamar Ravens. It's the Steelers defense held the Ravens to 12 of 19. And that's, that's only 61%. That's not very good. You should be in the 70s and a league leading total bit probably be in the high 70s for the year. And so 61% is not where you want to be.
Yeah. I mean, things are tough defense, and they know each other very well, and they know what teams, the Steelers know what the Ravens want to do on offense for the most part. The Ravens know what the Steelers try to do on offense. I think there was definitely a chip on the Steelers' shoulder from last season. They didn't want to have their season end the way it did in an embarrassing fashion. I think there's a lot that both teams were playing for. Unfortunately, I think it's just one of those games where things fell the wrong way.
Yeah, one of the big things that happened is the Ravens really killed themselves with some penalties in this game, and that had not been a theme lately. They'd been really pretty good this year, honestly, with penalties. By the way, got a piece of research which came into me before the show, which I think is just outstanding, and I'm going to bring this up because I really wanted this information. And Taylor Hall sent it to me. He said, after reporting almost daily on the use of set and snap drills over the summer, curious to hear if you feel they had any noticeable benefit in 2025, or if what sounds like was a considerable amount of time spent on the drills would have been better spent elsewhere. I know this is somewhat hard to quantify. I'm more curious just for your opinion. Stats below ignore any potential benefit of more complex snap counts, reducing the effectiveness of the opposing pass rush. Okay, so in 2024, they had 24 false starts. The league average was 22.09, and they had 10 illegal formation, which I'm not sure those really count in the same way. I would not probably put in the same place. The illegal formations, including those three in the first game when they – do you remember the vendetta they seemed to have against the Ravens and Ronnie Stanley in that game? I think they might have called them for four in that game, but it might have been only three. Anyway, they finished with 10 for the year. And three accepted was the average across the league. In 2025, they had seven and four were accepted. I don't draw too much from the illegal formation stuff. Was Ronnie trying to cheat to try and get an extra advantage versus Highsmith? Maybe, but it was unfortunate timing. Yes, but did it stall a drive? The answer is no. But they did have three drive stalling penalties in this game. I'm sorry, let me finish I don't want to bury the lead here. False starts dropped from 24 to 19, from 24 to 25. It's only a gain of five false start penalties. And false start penalties, as I always talk about, are not as important as post-snap penalties where you have a declinable component to it too, that you give the defense an option. So from that perspective, it wouldn't seem like it's that useful. It's probably worth about 3 to 4 points on the year are avoiding. I'm sorry, it was three penalties or it was five penalties. I think it was five penalties. But if it was five penalties, it would be worth about 3 points, 3 or 4 points. And but I think there's a second gain from that is if you can run your offense with different cadences, which is I think what the Ravens did this year, then you have a better chance to draw the opponents offside, which isn't part of this research, and also to get the pass rush sitting on its heels. So I think from that perspective, it was probably a good game. And Taylor, I really appreciate you doing that research. It's something I really wanted to see. And thanks for sending that to me before the show. Now back to the penalties in this game. They had three drive stalling penalties, two holding calls. That was Stanley and Linderbaum in this game. Linderbaum, you know, obviously negated a 20-yard run, which really hurt. On third and nine, too. It was a double whammy. And then they also had a 5-yard penalty, which maybe you don't think of as stalling a drive, but it turned second and 11 into second and 16, and the Ravens weren't able to convert that. That was Tez Walker. Just a frustrating freaking night that you have three of your series. You know, those three of the seven the Ravens missed had a penalty, you know, it rolled up in that sausage.
Yeah, the Linderbaum one in particular, that was the backbreaker, I thought, on a drive where it was looking promising. Huge play by Lamar, as previously mentioned. I thought it was kind of a ticky-tack penalty as well. It wasn't, like, egregious by any stretch. I think they called out in the commentary that it was an unnecessary penalty. I don't think it really impacted the play at all. It wasn't, like, it wasn't super, like, clear and obvious, but you know, it is killer. Like there's holding penalties. I mean, and the Stanley one was obvious. I mean, he tackled a guy basically. And that might've led to like a sack if he didn't do it. But it's just, sometimes you can't get out of your own way. It's been kind of a theme for the Ravens in a lot of ways. And it's unfortunate that, you know, those are the kind of things that you think about at the end of the season. And MARTA, in a season where you had a lot of like little things like this that just went wrong in the wrong moments, and just kind of emphasizing that.
Right. It would take a whole nother layer of analysis to go through what went wrong in these nine games and really trying to to look at the individual factors that lost them. Cause a couple of games, it's just going to be injuries. The two Cooper Rush starts, I think it's just injuries is what you basically assign most of those losses to. Although they got the snot kicked out of them by the Texans, for example, there was more than injuries wrong, but injuries still account for a tremendous amount of that. Injuries would have been enough alone and maybe with the more significant factor, which is, I guess, how I'd say it differently. But you look at that Buffalo game, it was a host of things. You look at the Detroit Lions game, it was in doubt until, you know, a final fourth and two pass they completed. So, it'd be quite a project to go through that. And maybe an interesting offseason pod to look at, you know, hey, what was the real reason for every single one of these losses? Try and do loss shares or something, some kind of system like that.
That sounds like a painful endeavor.
It does. Doesn't sound like no fun at all. Who wants to do that work? Yeah, right. The Ravens did in this game, I thought, return to kind of some high variance outcome of plays. And that was never more apparent than in that fourth quarter when they only took three plays to score. I think three or four plays to score on the other drive where they had a 50-yard touchdown on third and one, and then a 64-yard touchdown on third and four. And then they drove down the field, you know, very quickly in the last 55 seconds. Not that there were time for a lot of plays. And it acted, it's not a bad thing. And, you know, I love the explosiveness. I love forcing the other teams to defend every blade of grass, but also acts as kind of a tax on your offensive output or tax on that is imposed on your defense in terms of effectiveness, that they have to play so many consecutive snaps and are so tired, you know, when they're doing it like they were in that fourth quarter.
Yeah. A lot of people who look at advanced metrics when you're looking at analyzing football, look at two big metrics. One is EPA per play, and one is success rate. And by EPA per play, the Ravens were pretty good. And that's a testament to the explosiveness that you're talking about. By success rate, they were one of the worst teams in the NFL this year because they weren't able to consistently string together plays that would sustain drives. So they, you know, had a lot of stuffs on first downs or a lot of second downs where they were really bad this year. They just couldn't, you know, get the yards that you get to have a third and like normal play. And then, you know, you're relying on those big plays in order to make up for the fact that you're kind of not doing well on a lot of other plays. Ideally, you know, a good offense, and this is what the Ravens have been in the past, has been a very explosive and a very high success rate offense. And why did that happened, why that fell apart. I think that's maybe where that research needs to look at. You know, yeah. Why were they not so successful on a down-to-down basis as we've seen in recent years? I think there's a number of things that could be answers to that, but it's that definitely is, you know, what we're talking about here is not being able to consistently, you know, string together drives, keep the defense rested, and really kind of have to be on their heels the entire time.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point in particular that you could map to Derrick Henry, who had second highest ever success rate by a player with 300 plus carries last year at 58.8%. He dropped off to 53.1% this year. Now that doesn't seem good, but it's actually quite good. His career success rate at Tennessee was only 49.3, and he comes in second in the league in yards in the end. It's a lot. That reduced success rate hurt the Ravens a lot this year. And it's not on Henry entirely. It's, you know, it's, some of it is Henry's inability to force tackles, certainly, but a lot of it is on the offensive line as well, not giving as many really good opportunities. Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
As many yards before contact. By the way, incredibly frustrating if you try to research yards before contact right now. Yes. It's very different from source to source. Very different. So PFF and PFR completely different in terms of their how they map out yards before contact for Henry this year.
It's interesting. I would imagine that with, you know, all the NGS and the camera angles that we have available to us, it should be pretty cut and dry.
Well, it still requires a definition at the base. So is it the first contact, the first forceful contact? If somebody just touches them with the edge of their finger, is that first contact? It's that sort of thing that gets in the way of everybody, you know, running the exact same model.
And one other thing I would say on the success rate, and this is something that I think we could look at and why Tyler Huntley was successful when he was in the lineup for the Ravens, was he was able to use his legs when he was quarterback, and they had that element. Much of the season when Lamar was in there, that wasn't part of their offense this year compared to every other year that Lamar has been at the Ravens' helm. He just didn't have that ability to pick up a third and medium, rush one for 10 yards on first down. You know, those plays just moved the chains consistently that was missing from the Ravens' offense this year.
Yeah, they're in great shape against a very weakened opponent, against the Packers too. The Steelers are just coming back to full strength. Their only weaknesses are really on offense, in terms of, you know, not having Metcalf in particular. But they had all their defensive linemen back, and they had T.J. Watt back. The Packers, you know, they started the game low on defensive linemen. They lost Riley early in that game. And we're in a very tough shape. And we've seen the Ravens get themselves in that position as recently as Sunday night too, with regard to not having enough linemen active. Let's continue on though. One of the things that complaints has come up is about Henry only getting 5 carries in the second half. Did you have any problem with the Henry's usage in this game?
I honestly didn't. I thought he was pretty effective when he was getting the touches. I mean, as we've talked, they didn't have that many snaps. And he saw probably like half the Ravens snaps. He touched the ball on about half of them, or maybe slightly less. I think he clearly was out there more than the other running backs. The one play that I kind of was griping about was that first drive, third down, when Ali was in there and he got the carry.
Yes, that was a little weird. Yeah.
I was a little skeptical about why that was the decision that was made there. But, you know, I think for the most part, he was given a good amount of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did even say I thought it was okay if they go for it on 2 downs here, and I wouldn't have been upset giving it to Ali when I saw him in the backfield. I knew that, you know, he basically is a guy who they want in there to block, even though he hasn't been that good as a blocker lately. But then they hand him the ball. He gets nothing. They go for it on 4th and 3. They hit Tez Walker for the big play. So that was another, you know, the fourth of Lamar's great throws of the night.
I will say also on that play, Ali did have a nice blitz pickup on the Tez Walker touchdown. I mean, he stoned the blitzer pretty well. So props to him for doing that.
Yeah. All right. You know, one of the bad things that happened to the Ravens was a very weird turnover. Now, I score offensive linemen down for allowing PDs, and they allowed a couple in this game. I couldn't even tell for sure whether it was Cameron or Highsmith who actually made the PD, but Highsmith is claiming it. I think they might have both touched it. I think that's very possible. Then the ball bounced up in the air. Then Stanley popped it back up in the air inadvertently, obviously, but he still put it back up in the air. And T.J. Watt finally found the football before it hit the ground. Just an incredibly frustrating play there.
It was wild, it happened so fast. Like it was almost like it wasn't even popped up in the air from Stanley to Watt. It was almost like it was like a sideways kind of like. He just landed in his stomach, and he happened to be able to like pull it in. It was one of the freakiest like plays I think I've ever seen. Of course, you know, that's kind of the way the Steelers tend to manage to win games. They get these kind of plays, and I don't know if they're lucky or if they've, I don't know. It's just something they work on, but they have been good at batting passes. Something that, you know, I think they try to do. And it's something that, it's not always, you know, on the quarterback, I don't think, but, you know, sometimes you see somebody in your face and you try to go around it, or you try to like do like a different angle. And obviously on a couple of plays, just wasn't able to get it around them.
Yeah. Tough night for Stanley overall. He was at least part of that. I think Voorhees was too on that play, but we'll get into that in the second half of the show. But he had his worst game in a very long time in the game on Sunday. Let's jump over and talk about Lamar a little bit. The Steelers really came after him with pretty fair amount of numbers. I mean, I'm not saying extraordinary, but they were about 4.6 total rushers per play. I had this written down somewhere because I know I had to calculate it. I think it was slightly over 4.6. But they rushed 14 times. Jackson threw for 7.2 yards per play. They rushed 5 times. He threw for 15.6 yards per play. And they rushed 6 twice. He threw for 26.5 yards per play. So I'd say you can't. That's not enough data, obviously, for the 5 and 2 passes to really show anything. But Jackson certainly did well against higher volume rushing looks in this game. Did fine, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you group the 5 and 6 rush kind of together as that was basically a third of the dropbacks. It was. I mean, you're looking at close to 20 yards per play on that. That's amazing performance against a blitz.
Yeah.
A blitz. And a lot of those plays he was under pressure too. So it's just really phenomenal work by Lamar.
Yeah, very, very much true. When we looked at, we'll talk about ample time space, ball out, quick pressure, those divisions that comprise the opportunity set, only four ample time and space opportunities. And they did only throw the ball 21 times in the game. So from that perspective, when you throw the ball only 21 times in the Ravens, you're supposed to win the ball game because it usually means you're running it 40 times. Yeah. But they weren't running it 40 times because they only had, 48 offensive plays. So they ran the ball 27 times, and that wasn't quite enough to get it done. But four ample time and space anyway in this game. 3 of 4 complete for 80 yards, 20 yards per play. Now, 8.5 is the standard for an ample time and space opportunity. And by comparison, Rodgers was at 5.7 yards per ample time and space. Then with ball out quick, 6 times, so that's 29%, on which he went 5 of 6 for 67 yards. That's 11.2 yards per play. Outstanding. And you should throw for about 6 yards per play on those. All right. The 11 pressures. 52% of the time he was pressured. 11 out of 21 times, effectively the Steelers won. That's all you have to do, basically, to break even, or before January 1st it was, to break even on bets on football. You know, is win, these 11 to make 10 bets, 11 out of 21 times. But it's new tax law that's changed, folks. There's a separate pod out there about that you can hit. But anyway, on those 11 plays, 3 of 8 for 75 yards. He still threw for 6.8 yards per play. 3.5 is the expectation. There were 3 sacks on those plays and 1 turnover with the batted ball.
Yeah, I think this speaks a lot to the offensive line performance. You know, mm-hmm. you mentioned a lot of pressure. It's too much pressure. And even with those pressures, Lamar played a heroic, type of game. And a lot of the explosive plays came off those pressures. So that's why some of the numbers are kind of like are skewed as exceptionally large yards per play, as you mentioned in the 5 and 6 rush situations. But, it's when you're looking at any of these numbers where it's 10, 20 yards per play, that's exceptional. And he only threw the ball, 19 times, I think, 18 times.
18 plus 3 sacks, yes.
18 times, and to have 238 yards, that's just an insane,
right?
Insane efficiency. So that's those big plays to Zay Flowers and Walker that we're looking at right there.
Yeah, it's basically 10.5 yards per throw that he had per throw, including the sacks, including the net yards per play. So he outperformed his opportunity set by 113 yards on the day. He should have only thrown for 109 yards given that opportunity set. He threw for 222, and that's net of sacks. 5.4 yards per play better than expectation. Not 5.4 yards per play. 5.4 yards per play better than expectation. His expectation for this was probably about 5 yards per play, but he more than doubled it in terms of where he ended up for the game. So just an outstanding performance.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the silver lining to the way the season ending was that performance by Lamar. There aren't questions about the quarterback, like you mentioned earlier, about does he still have the fastball? Clearly, he can still play at an elite level. And now it's just about putting the right pieces around him.
Yeah, hopefully he comes to camp healthy, at least is able to start the season healthy next year. Injuries will happen to anyone. But it's so important for the Ravens that Lamar's at 100%. People have heard me say this on the show, but I take so much backlash anytime I hear this on Twitter, is that I'm blaming Lamar for what's happened to the Ravens. The Ravens offense depends upon Lamar for misdirection. So when Lamar's not healthy, it really hurts the Ravens more than it hurts other teams, even that have a franchise quarterback. Missing Joe Burrow certainly hurts the Bengals. Missing Josh Allen would kill the Bills and whatnot. But missing Lamar's, legs being 100% really, really hurts the Ravens. He can still be effective as a passer, but he's not nearly as effective without the misdirection fuel for the Ravens offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why he never gets enough credit for the performance he has when it's on the positive side.
That's a great point. That's a great point. He makes the other 10 players better, but does he really make 21 other players better?
He makes the entire team better because of what he can do as a unique talent.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Completely agree with that. Great point. All right, let's move on to a little bit of the other stuff with the running backs and the running game and whatnot. So Henry had 36 snaps, Mitchell 7, Ollie 8. No Pony snaps in this game, which is it's not completely surprising because they were really more going back to a zone run game than one that was entirely based on power. And the power game tends to power or zone, either one can have elements of deception, but it's probably shows up more in the power game that you want to move an inside linebacker out of position somehow by having a motion or a counter or something like that, that will throw people off the simple point of attack that you're trying to go after. More reliance on zone in this game, but relatively few power plays. Henry had his fourth consecutive good game where he was had a lot of yards after contact. And he's also been one this season, you know, frankly, was having a huge amount of regression, much more than I was okay with at midseason, even till maybe about week 11 or so. And he really turned it on. He finished the season very strong for the Ravens. He's another player that, you know, it's not just the fact that he's second in the league in rushing because he gets a ton of carries. And you know, the Ravens certainly rely on him, and they have Patrick Ricard and they have Lamar Jackson. You know, there are things that make him better. It's the fact that Henry himself just was running better at the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if there is some truth to the, you know, when it gets colder out, players don't want to tackle as much. I think there is something to it. I mean, it hurts more, right? when everything is cold, it's harder. It's the ground hurts more. I think there's some truth to that. And he's always been one of those players that you give him the ball when you're ahead, and you can just dominate because there's business decisions to get made when it looks like the things are going against you, and you have this 250-pound guy who runs a 4.4 and is like an Adonis, and he's just going to run you over. So I completely understand that is part of what makes Derrick Henry Derrick Henry, and he's not going to be someone who succeeds in a limited like opportunity set. Like, he needs to have that, you know, 20, 25 touches, I think, to be at his best.
Yeah, and when you think about what 20 touches mean, that's 340 carries on a season. I mean, I'd say unrealistic. I'd say 19 carries is really pushing it. And then you can get maybe another touch and a half as a receiver, so you could do that. But I don't think people are ever really going to get just run 25 times or run. Let's run him 25 to 30 times and see what happened. And of course, we had this incredible game where he runs 36 times against the Packers when that's the main weapon they have. I don't see that being duplicated. That was an exceptional outlier.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, every game's going to be a little bit different, right? And there's going to be different game scripts, and it's never going to happen that way every single game, but I think for him to be at his best, 20 touches is where he's really going to be really humming, I think. And a lot of that is also game script dependent. So you want to have him when you're in the lead, right, and you're up two scores. That's where he's going to be most effective.
Yeah, the game script, we just went over it briefly because you didn't have a problem with his usage or anything. But the five carries in the second half, which people want to say, oh, they're five carries. They had the ball in the final 55 seconds for six or seven plays, whichever it was. You can't run him then. The time you could have run him was on third and one when you throw the 50-yard touchdown pass to Flowers instead. Now, or when you throw the 64-yard touchdown pass to Flowers, one of the two, but the second one in particular where it was third and one, they had a chance to run him and try and whittle down the clock that way. Now, I've taken a lot of heat from various people. Now, I don't care, but because I'm right about this. The Ravens had a chance to win the game with Flowers kneeling at the one had they had the right code word in the huddle. Okay, so if that had been the down or whatever the special code is to kneel down at the 1 yard line, if they'd had that in, they would have won the game there. They would have very likely won the game by either trying to run for the touchdown on second or third down and leaving the Steelers with either about a minute and 10 or potentially like 25 seconds to play when they got the football. But they didn't punish for the Steelers for their lack of timeouts. I don't want to really go into that again. I don't know if you heard those pods. Did you already?
So I heard the argument, and there's risk either way, right?
Of course, there's risks in all paths. Yeah. Important point.
I do agree that they could have done a better job of punishing the Steelers for not having those timeouts. But it's something to, I think really the biggest thing that they would have gained there, which is giving their defense a little bit more of a breather.
Right, sure. Actually, not getting their defense back on the field. That's what I was hoping for. And yeah, that was the real payoff if they wanted to use that strategy was, and it's what they should have been thinking, is how the hell can we not put our defense in a position where they're very disadvantaged, dog tired, and we'll lose us the football game. And by the way, exact same situation 9 years ago on Christmas night when they lost to the Steelers on the Immaculate Extension. The Ravens had just given up two consecutive plays. One was two consecutive drives, six plays for 90 yards and five plays for 75 yards. Yep. So they allowed 15 yards per play, touchdowns on both of them. They score with a minute 18 to go, and they gave the ball back over to Roethlisberger. He drove right down the field, and the Immaculate Extension play then occurred to finish that game. So ugly, ugly result. And I wish teams would be more aggressive about that. And if Harbaugh knew how much currency he didn't have in the bank at this point, you know, maybe he wouldn't have had any employment risk on the line that he would have felt bad about. He could have gone out with something like that, or gone to the playoffs, frankly, with something like that. All right, let's move on. 1.84 heavies per play was down a little bit. I don't think there's anything really to say. They actually, you know, one of the things that was kind of interesting is they didn't try and give the tackles help in this game, at least not much. They only had six set and seven chip blocks the whole game. That's a low total. And there's the pass rushers per play. The Pittsburgh had 4.71 pass rushers per play in this game. So that's not a combination of numbers I would normally see, that you use that few set and chip blocks per play and the other team rushes that many in a game.
Yeah, that is an interesting strategy. I mean, I think the reasoning behind that is you want to get more players out in routes. Because I think that the Steelers didn't have the coverage guys that could match up with the Ravens. And to a certain extent, it worked. But mm-hmm. it definitely only worked because of Lamar's magic. So the offensive line did not do their job in terms of picking up blitzes in this game. And more help probably could have helped a little bit. But I feel like, you know, the O-line still would have struggled. And they still probably would have gotten pressure even with an extra chipper on some of those plays.
Yeah, usually it is a fool's errand to keep in the extra guy, because what it means is, I guess if you're chipping, you're still going out, but it limits the set of routes you can do is the problem. But you also give the defense a chance to tighten up their formation, which is not good. I've always disliked it when Lamar brings somebody else in from the outside. I like them to move people further out to try and outflank a defense that's trying to crowd the line of scrimmage and then just get the ball out quickly.
Yeah, and especially with Lamar, who is able to use space to kind of get away from pressure. You bring more bodies into the pocket to pick up potential, you know, rushers, then that's also more bodies that he has to navigate around.
Yeah, good point. Real good point. All right, Gabe, always a pleasure talking football with you. I'm glad you could make time tonight to do this. And I know it's not the greatest time ever in terms of this particular Ravens team in this particular season, which has been a very difficult one. But tell Pixworks where they can talk football with you online.
Best place to find me is on Twitter, at Gabe Berge. Definitely putting my thoughts out there as I can. You know, a lot of news already in the off season, so I'll definitely be part of that conversation. Got a head coach new hunt out there, and a lot of turnover in the Ravens coaching. So it'll be interesting to see what direction they take. So,
all right, maybe at the end of the next episode, I'm going to ask you who's your favorite to be the coach. So you think about that when we go off that. Right. But we'll be back. We'll talk about the offensive line some. Thanks for all your listeners for your loyalty this year. Hit me up with hashtag Film Study Mailbag if you want to hear questions. I'll direct them to the proper show even during the off season, or use them to make a 1 to 3 minute video. And I've really appreciated the questions I've gotten for that. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.